It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday. It's the 16th of July. How you're keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. You're very welcome along for another 3 hours of information, entertainment from a local perspective, national, international, in fact, as well. We want you involved in that conversation, starting your own 086 60 25,000, your WhatsApps and texts. If you're listening to us from outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25,000. Give us a call too, 07491 25,000. If you want to email the show, it's comments@highlandradio.com. Now, if you want to watch the programme, if it suits you, maybe with the children off school, you're at home and you don't have to leave the house, well, throw us up on your smart screen TV on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. The app is there. Or if you've a Fire Stick, you can watch us on that as well, Highland Radio Ireland. And we're across Facebook. At the moment, we're not on X because Elon Musk's decided that you have to subscribe before you can stream live on the X platform. Still don't know what we're going to do there, but we shall see. But anyway, plenty of other ways to stay in touch with what's going on. You heard it in the news there, and it's covered in all of the newspapers. These are the protests in Coolock. There's images of people in balaclavas throwing missiles, stones, rocks at Gardaí. And concerns are mounting within the Gardaí about a growing complex and volatile security threat in North Dublin after clashes between Gardaí and protesters opposed to international protection applicants being housed in a disused former paint factory. I presume this is one of the four or five that are going to be scattered around the country. So this is just the first potentially of a number. Protesters remained in the site of the Crown Paints Industrial Unit, Malahide Road, Coolock, last night after violent clashes earlier in the day resulted in a security man hospitalised. A number of Gardaí injured, arson attacks on a Garda car and a digger, and 15 arrests being made. The Garda operation, which was continuing last night in a tense standoff with protesters and far-right agitators at the site, at its height, involved up to 200 members of the force, more than 40 Garda vehicles and the Garda helicopter monitoring from above. The violent scenes included fireworks being aimed at lines of public order unit Gardaí. Also thrown at Gardaí were glass bottles, so-called fast gas canisters, rock stones and curbing taken from businesses within the Malahide Road retail centre. Gardaí can be seen as well charging people or moving them along with their shields, pushing them along, using pepper spray or whatever spray it might be, taking people to the ground, arresting them. Not really nice scenes that you want to see in your own country, is it? Large wheelie bins, and I mean from all of it, by the way, I don't mean the Garda actions. Large wheelie bins were also taken from industrial units. The business hastily closed around lunchtime and set alight by youths on the northbound carriageway of Malahide Road. Debris littered large sections of the road after the violent scenes were subdued by about 4:30 p.m. Now, I don't know the makeup of the protest. I don't think it really matters if they're from the area or not. That's something that's not really relevant to me anyway, because even look, in terms of planning applications, I could oppose a development in Cork if I wanted to. That's allowed. So I don't really see the issue with people from outside an area coming in to join a protest. Obviously, it's the nature of the protests and the violent scenes. I mean, there are ways to protest that don't involve this type of activity. But it's also not clear in these instances, you know, whether people involved in this are just having a go at the cops, in inverted commas, and don't really know why they're there. Do you know what I'm on about? People that are just see a bit of public disorder and want to join it in. I don't know. It's very hard to determine what is precisely going on, but unsavory scenes, to say the very least. Any views on that, let us know. This is potentially good news for some of you listening. The government will continue to support one-off housing developments in rural Ireland, going against expert advice. This was a worry here. An expert panel last year reviewed the 2018 National Planning Framework and called on the government to take the politically difficult decision of placing new restrictions on such development. The report delivered to Housing Minister Dara O'Brien in August last year warned that failure to address the issue would be inconsistent with the high-level goals of the framework. But an updated version of the MPF published last week did not include any major changes regarding one-off planning. The expert group established by Minister O'Brien had recommended that the revised NPF consider the inherent unsustainability of scattered, uncoordinated patterns of new houses in the countryside. It called for a new strategy to direct developments in rural Ireland towards rural towns and villages and to restrict new urban generation or generated rural housing elsewhere. Successive expert groups have pointed out that one-off housing in rural Ireland is not sustainable. However, rural TDs have defended people's right to apply for and gain permission for one-off housing in areas where they grew up. Last week, the Acting Assistant Secretary in the Department of Housing, Paul Hogan, said the approach to rural areas in the draft revised NPF is largely focused on supporting the current policy's approach, which promotes the development of rural areas, including through managed and sustainable growth. Now, there was sort of a little bit of a standoff, would you call it, whereby the Donegal County Council's county development plan and elements of development in it along N56 and elsewhere was somewhat at odds with national policy. Now, I'm not quite sure if this covers that, but certainly something we'll look into and get some sort of a clarity on it, because there was, as I say, what councillors wanted in the county development plan in terms of how certain areas of housing didn't jive with the national plan. So we'll see if that's... covers that. Okay, in the Mail this morning, Irish dermatologists have warned social media users not to fall for dangerous misinformation online that claims sunscreen causes cancer or has toxins that seep into the bloodstream. This has kind of come in a couple of times. I think we were talking to a skin expert not so long ago about the dangers of sunbeds, and people were texting and going, oh yes, but what about the cancer-causing chemicals in sunscreen? There is just, such as the internet now, for some reason, I don't know what the motivation is, a group of individuals or a random selection of individuals who are trying to discourage people from using sunscreen. Videos claiming sunscreen contains harmful chemicals will lead to cancer or disrupt hormones have received thousands of views across social media platforms, with dermatologists eager to combat the nonsense theories. American reality star Kristen Cavallari is among the high-profile personalities who have said they don't wear sunscreen. Other influencers have claimed it is unnatural, carcinogenic, or contains toxins that can seep into the bloodstream. One video where the creator urged viewers to opt for a good diet so the body can produce its own sunscreen gained more than 400,000 views on TikTok. Others shared alternatives that include homemade creams, herbs, and working to build up your sun exposure. Now, at the end of the day, I think it's been pretty much established now that exposure to sunbeds damages the skin, can cause cancer, can cause skin cancer, the biggest cancer in Ireland. But there's a big difference, I suppose, between saying don't use sunscreen and protect your skin in other legitimate ways versus just go out and get used to it. You know, that's different information there. Anyway, we might talk about that either today or down the line. The Irish Sun this morning, and this also sort of has an online feel to it because, of course, since the disappearance of Jay Slater, there has been an awful lot of speculation online. You've got the keyboard detectives, of course. You've got those that saying that we're coming up with theories, really quite hurtful theories, I presume, for family and friends, that in some way something else had happened to Jay other than what appears to have happened. And it was another case of just the internet going crazy for it. Well, a pal on holiday with Jay Slater when he vanished paid an emotional tribute to his friend yesterday after a body was found during the search. Brad Hargreaves wrote, "No words, nothing will be the same without you. Rest easy, brother. Love you always." His heartfelt online post came as a body was recovered from a remote ravine in Tenerife, just yards from Jay's last known location. That was taken from his mobile phone. Dramatic images released by Spanish police showed the moment a helicopter crewman was winched into the chasm and his arms aloft in the delicate recovery operation. Following the find, Jay's heartbroken mum, Debbie Duncan, 55, is demanding answers over how police search teams missed the body. That happens, though. You know, I think oftentimes in grief, we always look for additional things to be grieving about. I think I can't speak for her, but her son has been found. Now, it must be heartbreaking for her, and I understand that. And she's been through a fair bit too. I know videos were circulating on social media which showed her partying, and people were saying, oh, look, here she is in Tenerife, doesn't look too worried. But in reality, the videos were from years ago, and in fact, Jay was with her at a function in a local pub in England, and that's the kind of stuff that was going on, and very hurtful stuff. Animal charities are deeply worried shelters will be overwhelmed following the announcement XL bully dogs are to be banned. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. The ISPCA said in euthanizing a healthy dog is not an option. The proposed legislation would make it illegal for charities to rehome banned dog breeds. It also claims new laws are unfair to responsible owners who already comply with current rules. From October 1st, regulations will prohibit the importing, breeding, selling and rehoming of XL bullies. From February 1st next year, there'll be a ban on owning the dogs unless in receipt of a certificate of exemption. A certificate of exemption will only be issued to owners who can prove their XL bully has a dog licence and is microchipped and neutered, which, I mean, it's probably going too far for some. But, I mean, if that means you can hold on to your dog for the rest of its natural life, it is an option, I suppose. If owners are not compliant with the new rules, their pets will be seized and euthanised. Animal charity, My Lovely Horse Rescue, has said banning the dogs will be like a mass murder. The ISPCA currently has 211 dogs in its care. Of these, 68 are restricted breeds. 28 potentially fall under the definition of XL bully. So, I mean, if it's the right decision, it's the right decision. If it was a knee-jerk reaction, it was a knee-jerk reaction. I don't know. And it's good to see, but I think this is to be welcomed. I think for far too long, the road safety message, particularly directed at younger people, though I'm not saying younger people are more responsible than other age categories, but it's often been older people talking down to younger people, if you know what I mean. And it seems that people maybe that younger people look up to are going to get involved in trying to get the road safety message home, which I think is it's a good move and should have happened years and years ago. I remember speaking to, I can't remember who it was, but it was a gentleman who was high up in the RSA at that point. And I said to him, this is about 6 or 7 years ago, you know, me and you talking about road safety, no teenager is going to be listening to us because they think we're too old F to the S's, if you know what I mean. So I think it's good that the message is coming from maybe more relatable voices. The script's Danny O'Donoghue has joined forces with GEA sports stars, football players, rugby stars and a host of musicians to record road safety messages. Well-known Irish faces across the world of sport and music, including the script's frontman Lyra, Irish rugby internationals Andrew Porter and Aoife Wafer, Irish women's soccer team goalie Courtney Brosman and a host of GEA inter-county players, including Shona Shea of the Kerry football squad and Grace Walsh from the Kilkenny Camogie, will be appealing to drivers to travel safely on the roads and arrive alive, hopefully for free, so the money can be spent doing other things. Actually, I do say that, though. I think it was one of the McHughes actually were involved in road safety messages on this radio station as well, going back a number of years ago. So it's not a brand new initiative. Of course, many of you not on social media. Did you spot the funnel clouds? There were pictures taken from Milford sent to me, a video from Letterkenny sent to me. It's quite an interesting sight. Some of the videos appear to show them touching the ground, but others, they're like wee elephant's trunks coming out of the clouds. Apparently quite rare, but two of them spotted from Letterkenny. But as I say, I got pictures from Milford and elsewhere as well. Get any good videos of pictures of that, send it through to us and we can show it to our watchers and share it on our Facebook page. 086 60 25,000 is probably the best way to get them through to us. Now, we had this contact from a listener of ours and it reads as follows. It's impossible to get somewhere to rent. I'm currently moving between families with two kids aged 2 and 5. I recently moved home just a year ago. Because accommodation is too expensive and anything there is too expensive, I'm working here in Ardra at the minute, but I would take anything around the areas. For all our mental health, we need to find somewhere. The cheapest is €1,300 a month. I can't get into the creche until 2026 because it's full at the moment. I've emailed people to get on lists, but no joy. I'm depending on mum to do things for me. So that's a mum with two children aged 2 and 5 in and around the Ardra area that's looking for somewhere to live. The cheapest they can find at the moment is €1,300 a month. I mean, is that person effectively homeless? Not homeless in the sense that, you know, they're going from family to family or the mother's helping out. But if they independently can't find somewhere to live within the area that they need to be in for work and school and all that type of stuff. I mean, that's effectively, it would feel effectively homeless. But listen, on the off chance, if you know anywhere to rent in Ardra that would be suitable, or around the area for that matter, that would be suitable for a young mum and two children aged 2 and 5, please let us know and maybe we can put you in contact with that person because they are desperate. We'd be more than happy. We'd be more than happy to put you in contact with them, so to speak. Right, OK. Now, we're going to talk about the defective concrete block scheme again. Of course, we've been told, and Minister Charlie McConnell released a press release towards the end of last week talking about how it's working for a lot of people and changes are being made to it. We heard the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, on this show saying, look, tweaks are needed. But for the most part, they are following the science. He was very quick to point that out, and that the scheme is working for many people. But for many people, it simply isn't. And there's a growing cohort of victims of the defective concrete block scandal that are facing the same experience. Marty McElhenney is with me on the show now. Marty, thanks for your time. Lovely to speak to you.
No, thank you. Thanks for taking on the call at all.
No, it's important to get this out there. So there is more and more people seemingly having their option downgraded by the housing agency. So maybe the best way to explain it is originally what you were told was required for your house and then the process to being told that something else would do.
Okay. Greg, I'm part of an ever-increasing group of downgraded homeowners, and we've come together because we have all been transferred over to the housing agency. And then the housing agency has downgraded us. They have essentially said that the recommendations from the engineers that we have engaged, they've overruled them. And in most cases, that overruling that has happened has been done from a desk. So they haven't even visited our house. So we initially got our core samples and our engineer's report in August, September 2021. And we were transferred over to the housing agency in June 23. And the 4th of June of this year, the housing agency came back to us and said that they didn't agree with our engineer's option one recommendation. And they downgraded us to option three instead. And this is just not feasible.
And just in relation to that, Marty, obviously, 3 years have passed since the initial report was drawn together, the initial core samples. Was there a site visit in those intervening 3 years for them to make that determination that option one wasn't the correct option?
Absolutely not. And this is one of the huge problems we, the downgraded homeowners, have, is that we haven't had any visit. We have no noted deterioration since. In my case, it's nearly 3 years. There's other people who haven't had a visit in 4 years. So essentially, the decision is made at a desk without noting any further deterioration off our own homes. And it's...
So we heard also
isn't working for us.
We heard also too from the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, last week, who cut across me to say, I take issue with that. We are following the science. So your block showed levels of pyrite and pyrotite present in the blocks. Is that factored into the decision to switch you from option one, full demolition?
It is, to an extent. The housing agency report from their engineer is kind of kicking it on to an extent. They are agreeing with my engineer's report. They are saying, you know, it is noted that I have high susceptibility to deterioration due to presence of potentially problematic lithologies and minerals. You know, my rising walls have a low Newton strength in my eyes. It's 6.5 Newton noted. My rising walls are really deep. It's 1,650 millimetres deep. There is mica present in a large amount. There is pyrite and pyrotite. And my rising walls are in noted blue clay soil, wet conditions, and the rising wall has been wet for prolonged periods of time. Mm. But the housing agency then are sort of saying they think that we have adequate strength levels in our concrete blocks to sustain the rising wall.
Okay.
When they've actually, you know, they've undermined their own opinion in many ways already.
So just for those who may not be aware, Marty, obviously, option one is full demolition, isn't that correct?
Yeah.
What are they actually proposing that you do? And say it slowly, because I want people, as you describe what they want you to do, to sort of imagine what it might look like in their minds. So what is the option that's been given to you now at this point?
Okay, right now they want me to do option three. Option three to me is remove the outer walls and the inner walls and leave the rising wall. But the rising wall is where we have a huge problem with, because the rising wall has noted issues. Mm-hmm. And they essentially want me to rebuild on a rising wall, which is at huge risk of further deterioration or degrading, and they want me to build on it.
What about your internal walls?
Me 200... The internal walls, they're saying that's fine too. You know, they're not taking that into account. So literally, it's the whole outer leaf and inner leaf of the house, and then building on top of rising walls, which my engineer, the chartered engineer that we engaged, is saying, you know, the rising walls have issues. We can't do that.
It sounds to me like this would also be a very expensive way of repairing a house. I mean, what builder or what contractor might want to go in and like the roof is still there, the rising wall's still there, and I know some people call that different things, but rising wall seems to have been the most common way of describing it. The internal walls are still there. It sounds like a nightmare job.
It's a complete nightmare. And the other thing is, they want to give me 242,000 to do this. But I know, I feel in my heart that, you know, I'm going by, you know, we are moving along with the science and we are listening to the people who actually know what they're talking about. And my rising walls are going to fail. So then do I have to go back? And if I have to go back at that stage, I have to demolish my house anyway. You know, the rising walls are going to fail. They have noticed issues. That is what... That's what's hugely suspected by all, is that, you know, we're following the science, and the science is telling us that with these deleterious materials, there is a huge risk of the further deterioration, and we have to go by that. And the housing agency have essentially just ignored that in their report, and they just want me to build on top of walls that I know and has been noted they are at huge risk.
So, I mean, you've got a 90 days to appeal. I don't know what that appeal looks like. Do they send someone out to site? Because just to clarify here, what we have a situation where a chartered engineer goes on site 3 years ago, by the way, checks over the property. There's core samples taken. The determination is that the house needs to be demolished, and of course, there's concerns over the rising walls. Then that lands on a desk somewhere in Sligo, I think you've mentioned, and someone remotely says, oh, no, what we'll do is we'll leave the roof, we'll leave the internal walls, we'll leave the rising wall, and what we'll do is we'll give you 270,000 to change the inner and outer leaf of the, you know, effectively the four walls, but whatever shape your house is. So that to me then... please, Marty, go ahead. I just want to make sure... because you're so involved in this, you know, everything, but I really want the public to get what we're talking about here. But go ahead, Marty.
Okay, another point is that the engineers engaged by the housing agency, they were issued with a description of services. And under that description of services, it asked the chartered engineer's individual dwelling final report to the housing agency shall include the following: the extent of damage to date. But essentially, in my case and lots of other cases, you're missing years of further deterioration not taken into account because nobody's come to visit my house.
Yeah. But it leaves you in a situation like, what do you do? Say, for instance, the appeal is unsuccessful. Do you sit and wait and see if the science changes, in inverted commas? Do you sit and wait to see if there's a change of government and policy? Like, you know, it can't. I've got Paul Gallagher, the Attorney General of the Times. I've got Paul Gallagher's words ringing in my ears here.
We all have that.
Yeah.
Great. There's something else I just want to note too, that, you know, the appeals process itself is very hard. Nothing has been made easy for homeowners here at all. So the group that I'm in now, the Downgraded Homeowners Group, we are trying our best to work together, and it is a minefield. But there's an excerpt from the Schedule 15 from our appeals, and it tells us that, please note, only documents which were previously submitted to and considered by the designated local authority or the housing agency should accompany this notice of appeal. Mm. So essentially what that's telling us is that we can't submit anything proven or showing any further deterioration to refute their option that they've granted us. Mm-hmm. So we are stuck. It's like we are destined to fail. And absolutely, the Darrell O'Brien and Paul Gallagher's leaked emails there recently, you know, they are ringing in our ears. We feel that we've been set up to fail. There's no support there for us. The Downgraded Homeowners, we feel it's a money-saving exercise and that we're guinea pigs, essentially, to see what will happen with their house.
OK, Marty, stay there. Katrina's with us as well. Katrina, you're in a similar position. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm OK. What's your story?
Greg, I joined the scheme back in September 2020, and my chartered engineer came out and took my samples in October 2020. They were all submitted, and I got verbal approval from Donegal County Council in August 21 for the option one demolition. And then radio silence. Then in February 23, they asked me for my plans for the neighbouring property. Now, my neighbouring property is a council home. So this is unheard of with anybody else in a semi-detached where they were asked about the neighbour's plans, the plans for the neighbour's property. So at that point as well, we'd heard about the power test. So I had sent off for additional test results to see if I had that, because we were only tested for mica back in 2020. So I uploaded those new results in July 23 when I received them back. And those results showing the high levels of pyrrhotite on my property are now saved on the DCC portal as do not use under enhanced scheme in block capital letters.
Mm.
So not only have they not sent out the housing agency to look at my property for the huge levels of deterioration since 2020, they are purposely not using the updated information.
So they're actively saying the only information we ought to consider is the older 2020 information.
Exactly.
I wonder what the policy is there. Why would that be the case? Surely you want the best science available before you make such a big decision.
Well, Greg, I wondered the same thing. So I put in a Freedom of Information request to the council after I was downgraded on the 1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
And the council responded after, on the last day of the four-week period that they had to respond, and they said they had no paper files, that they have a paperless system and the only information pertaining to my case is on the DCC portal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I went into the DCC portal and saw the do not use under enhanced scheme. So they're not giving me any of the information whereby they gave me the verbal approval, and I don't understand why not.
Yeah. And what does where does that leave you in this process in terms of also getting your house to getting your house properly returned to you? What?
Well, the option they've given me is a blend of options 2 to 4.
Mm.
What that is, they're going to remove the outer leaf. They're going to remove the outer rising wall. So that's the wall between, say, the footpath and the foundations. And they're going to remove the rising wall on the inside of the house. So they're going to keep the inside of the external wall, but they're going to take the rising wall underneath the ground out. My engineer's report shows the moisture ingress throughout the inside of my home. I have cracking throughout the inside of my home. The technician who visited back in July 23 to see if I met the damage threshold, I invited him into the property to record all the internal cracks showing the damage inside. And he said, no, that wasn't in his remit, that a different engineer from the housing agency an engineer from the housing agency would visit at a later point to record the internal cracks. And then I was downgraded on the 1st of May without anyone having visited or contacted me in any way.
Yeah. And just reading Paul O'Brien's information to Dara O'Brien at that time, Paul Gallagher, sorry, the then Attorney General, he was of the view that local authorities wouldn't effectively have the balls to resist pressure from people in terms of going for full demolition. He also questioned whether or not engineers, he said, in respect of which claims are made must be assessed by independent engineers acting on behalf of the state and appointed by it, i.e. the people that are making these decisions now. He said, I believe that reliance on engineering reports from applicants will only greatly increase the cost of assessment, but will lead to significant abuses for the reasons already discussed, i.e. those engineers would come under pressure from homeowners to go for option one. So all of this is aligning seemingly with the Attorney General of the Times' advice. You don't want the council making the decisions because they'll be under pressure, and you need state-owned engineers going through the appeals process seemingly because homeowners would be putting too much pressure on the chartered engineers to go for option one. It's kind of, it's really been interesting to hear from you, Katrina, and to hear from Marty, because it really kind of seems to put that Attorney General advice into context.
Yeah. You see, the bit about that that I don't understand, Greg, is that I don't know my chartered engineer. I had to take a random name off a list that the council provided me with, and I had to ring those numbers. And the reason I chose my engineer was because he was the only person who answered the phone at the time.
Right.
I have no relationship with him.
But you
I
see,
never
Katrina,
knew the man.
I think really what also is in those words is that engineers, because of them knowing the score, right? Because why would you rebuild on rising walls that have, you know, these compounds in them? Why would you build on foundations that may fail also? What engineer would actually sign off in good conscience for a remedial option? Do you know that sort of way? That's not actually said expressly there. But if I were an engineer and I come out to your house, Katrina, and I know your foundations might go and I know your rising walls are dodgy, and I could say the same to Marty, I'm going to professionally go, well, in all consciousness, I can't do, you know, outer and inner walls. We have to do full demolition here. And I think the Attorney General was referencing that to some extent in saying that that's what they will do. And they'll be under pressure in some cases to do it. So we have to make sure that we've got our team in that can move to perhaps the least costly option. Katrina, is that how you're reading it? Or I mean, I'm only sort of trying to put one and one together here. But that's what it feels like with knowledge of this, with this advice from the Attorney General now, Katrina, Marty.
Yeah, that's exactly how we feel. We feel that we are not being listened to at all, and that these emails that were leaked, they're basically references us. You know, they're saying do not give them demolition, give them a lower option, do downgrade them, you know, try and save money there. But it's only saving money now. It's not saving money in the long run. And another thing, Greg, is that the group of downgraded homeowners that we have, everybody's focusing on their appeals, but nobody is thinking past the appeals. So if we are being set up to fail and we fail, no one is going to build their house. You know, we trusted the engineers we engaged, the engineers and the chartered engineers that gave us their advice and their opinions, who came out to do the core analysis, who visited our homes once, twice, three times. We're trusting their opinions. And we have to just go by somebody we don't know, in my case, engineers in Sligo, who have never set foot in my door, have never looked at my property. We can't do that. So the downgraded homeowners, we're not going to go, okay, yeah, I'll take option four, I'll take option three, and I'll start my build now within the time limit set upon me. It's not going to happen. So essentially, we're just sitting there. If we fail, we're going nowhere. You know, what can we do?
I think
a huge scandal.
This information from Katrina to updated testing, and in black capital letters, or sorry, in block capitals, do not use this under enhanced scheme. So the newer information, which may show a deterioration, or in fact, maybe could have been used to confirm a downgrade. I'm not saying that's the case, but it was do not use it, which I think is very bizarre, because you want the, surely, Katrina, you want the latest available information to make a responsible decision for taxpayers' money.
Of course I do. And what will happen now, Greg, which I think is the most shocking bit, if I take the 100,000 they've offered me to do my outer lease, I can only apply once again and to remove brickwork that hasn't been removed before, and can only get up to 90% of that 100,000. So when in 2-3 years' time all the cracking comes back, and of course on the inside, keep in mind I'm keeping my inside walls, my internal walls, so they are all, the cracking that's there is only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying they'll give me up to 90% of that. So they might give me 190,000 in total. My house is still going to fall down. But if they get me the 200 or just over that now to rebuild my house, that would be it fixed and the problem solved. But Greg, further to that, the inside of my property, it has a white furry mould all over it, mm-hmm. everywhere. The smell, it's just disgusting. And it's, you know, I have two small children in the house here, a toddler as well, you know. And Greg, this is going a wee bit off the point, but I was diagnosed with new daily persistent headache by the neurologist in Letterkenny, which is a 24/7 headache I've had for the last nearly 3 years now. It's all the time, constant. And that is directly linked to the mould in my house. It's a long-term exposure to mould causes this chronic headache. And things like that are not being considered. do you know, the health impact. And I wonder now, my toddler.
I'd be very worried. I mean, you're a big, strong adult, Katrina, you know, and it's affecting you like that there. How might it affect a developing respiratory system? I would share your concerns there. I'm not going to lie. Stay with us because Angela Ward's a peer of Mags and a homeowner as well. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Greg.
Okay, what have you got to say on this?
Mag have been working along with the downgraded homeowner group just to try and find a way out of this. It's obviously hugely concerning that IS465 engineers, members of Engineers Ireland, are having their professionalism brought into question by housing agency engineers. And we also saw that in the AG letter as well. Particularly given that the initial recommendations, as the ladies there had spoke of, had arisen on foot of, you know, significant petrographic and scientific testing and evidence, in addition to in-person inspection and an evaluation. We had Damien Owens fairly recently, Head of Engineering Ireland, making it quite clear that in the case where there would be a discrepancy between the decisions of the engineers, then the higher option of the two should be provided. Then we had the AG letter as well, referencing essentially that homeowners will seek demolition to ensure that they have the ability to resell and make their homes mortgageable, which is a perfectly reasonable and logical expectation, sorry, for any homeowner to have. We have had Engineers Ireland, of course, call IS465 not fit for purpose. We've had 70% of Engineers Ireland in the survey reporting that the proposed remediation option had been overturned. And the explanation given at the most recent Directors meeting of the housing agency was that the housing agency engineers were in a better position to make informed judgment because they had the ability to observe, you know, a wider scope and various engineers' reports, which absolutely makes no sense to me because every building must be considered on its own merit. And as Marty and Katrina there had said, you know, these are desktop decisions being made. Mm. There are no visits from the housing agency. There is no consideration of the deterioration that has gone on in these homes since they were first assessed 3 or 4 years ago. Now, MAG has been seeking legal advice on the legality and the validity of an appeals process that does not permit the submission of new and pertinent information, you know, particularly given the age of the original IS465 reports.
Yeah. I just want to remind people of the Attorney General's advice. Now, Simon Harris said in this show yesterday that it was just advice and that no one elected an Attorney General to make these decisions and so on and so forth. But just in the context of what we've been saying now, Paul Gallagher warned that applicants to the scheme would be incentivized to seek a demolition and rebuild their homes, having seen others do likewise. Furthermore, he said, as night follows day, if a significant number of homeowners are being recompensed on the demolition basis, it's inconceivable this will not encourage most other homeowners to submit claims on that basis. He said, there is the added complication that many of the engineers engaged by the homeowners preparing reports for submission to the local authorities may not have the required degree of expertise to confidently recommend anything less than full demolition and rebuild. Furthermore, these engineers are likely to be pressured by their clients to submit claims on that basis, and it would be difficult for them to resist doing so. As previously advised, it's going to be essential, and here we go, to lay down stringent conditions which must be fulfilled by every applicant in order to obtain payment on the basis of any other option other than the least costly option. Now, we're being told that this advice wasn't taken, it was only advice, but it seems to point exactly to the situation that we are finding ourselves in. I was under the impression as well that a lot of the original IS465 chartered engineers were trained by the Department of Housing, and it's now that's the very same department is overturning their decisions. I don't know if... Do you want to come in on that, Marty?
I don't know the actual, I don't know, I suspect there probably is truth to that, you know, to be honest, because they're definitely following the AG's letter, really, I suppose, aren't they?
All right. Is there anything...
Yeah, and that is the case because...
Yes, Katrina.
Sorry, I was just going to say that is the case because original homeowner engineers now have moved across to be employed by the housing agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, well, listen...
So some of them are one and the same.
Yeah, we're going to make our inquiries and see if we can get any more information on it. Marty... what about other people going through this on their own and thought they were the only ones? How can people access this group?
There is a downgraded homeowners group. If they want, I can leave. I'll leave my name number maybe with
if you're
Caroline
happy enough
or somebody,
to, yeah,
and
exactly.
we can get them through
no
that
problem.
Way.
Okay.
Yeah, so they can. They're essentially they are most welcome to come and join us. Right. We don't know what we're doing really half the time, but working together, we're trying to find our way out of this mess.
It's the only way to do it for sure. All right, Martin McElhenney, thank you. Katrina, thank you. Angela Ward, thank you very much indeed, and I hope common sense prevails for you and all of those affected by this. Tracy O'Carroll is Deputy Director of the National Care Experience Programme and joins us now. Good morning to you, Tracy. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks so much.
Okay, so talk to us about the purpose of the National Care Experience Programme then.
Okay, so the National Care Experience Programme is a partnership programme between the Department of Health, the HSC and HICWA. And what we're doing here is it's one of the surveys we're currently running is called the National Inpatient Experience Survey. And we've invited 31,000 people that were discharged during the month of May of this year and who are over the age of 16 to tell us about their experiences. And of those, 1,000 went to Letterkenny University Hospital. And we would really encourage each and every one of those people who have been invited to participate to tell us about their experience. We've heard from just over 150, and we're very grateful for those for responding to us. But the more we hear from, the more people we hear from, the greater the, you know, the case for Letterkenny to make the changes that they want to make. And I would just say it does provide actionable insights, you know, for the hospital, because the kind of this is a survey for patients to tell us about their experience. And on the back of that, you know, they can make the improvements the more people that they hear from. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in 2022, the last survey, they heard that there wasn't enough food choices. And you can see on our website, yourexperience.ie, where they set out clearly, you know, what their plans were on the back of that in terms of, you know, working with the catering teams to kind of build a broader kind of choice around their food offering.
I mean, obviously, this type of a survey doesn't paint the full picture. You know what I mean? Like in any given year, there can be anything between 70,000 and 80,000 people who go to the ED and leave without actually finishing the treatment or seeing a doctor. Is that okay? Is this really about the inpatient experience, or is there a danger that this might paint a picture, you know, that really it's about there's not enough food choices when really the biggest problems are about getting into the hospital into the first place?
So, Greg, this is about the experience of patients and service users when they're in the hospital. And it has 52 questions and it captures that whole experience, you know, that from entering the from your, you know, from admission, care on the ward, what happened when you're on the hospital, you know, on the hospital ward, about your tests and operations, around leaving the hospital, what happened there? Was there enough information for discharge and transfer, et cetera? And at the end, there's three kind of questions that are qualitative questions that you can answer. They're not tick box like the other questions. And you can tell us what was good, mm-hmm. what could be improved and any other comments. And Letterkenny University Hospital will look at every single one of those responses. And based on the responses, you know, they'll decide what improvements to make. And just to tell your listeners,
do we have an idea of what were the key issues from 2022 in Letterkenny University Hospital? I know you mentioned food choice there, but the catering staff down there are actually fantastic. I know this from personal experience. They're very accommodating, right? I mean, not everyone's going to have a good experience, but they're very good people down there. But other than that, what other concerns did people have? Now, if you don't have the findings of that report to hand, that's fine. Don't worry about that. But just in case you do, Tracy.
Yeah, well, I do. And just to say, your listeners can see this on yourexperience.ie. And they'll also see the responses of their survey this year, which will be up there in December. And we put out a report on the findings, you know, nationally, but also specifically for Letterkenny University Hospital. And Letterkenny University Hospital put up their response of the actions they will do. So again, the more we hear from, the greater the power that the voice of the patient has.
Okay.
And they speak on behalf of all of us. But in terms of 2022, they wanted to empower patients to provide feedback or complete complaints about their care. We're putting in another number of measures to make sure that that happens. So, such as service users will be empowered to participate in the care they receive. They'll be offered the opportunity to provide feedback. So they were putting in different mechanisms around there. And then the discharge and planning, that we've discovered is kind of the weaker area nationally and across a lot of hospitals. And in Letterkenny University Hospital, they were going to make more information available for patients post-discharge. And it's okay. Just so people know what to expect when they go home. What
we might go through that a little later on in the programme. Just very finally, you're asking people to go to yourexperience.ie. The criteria is that you... Actually, you tell us. I don't want to mislead anyone. Just the criteria.
Yeah,
so
yeah. When will you have to be in hospital? So I'll tell you what. We've invited everybody, people,
yeah.
And they've received a postal invitation. The last of those invitations will be going out by Friday. If you've got an invitation, you can respond either online or by hard copy. And the paper questionnaire has a free post envelope, so you can send back the responses to us. The closing date is July 31st, so we've just 2 weeks left in this survey. And I would say, if you have been invited, I know we're all very busy, but you are getting this opportunity to speak back, I suppose, on behalf of all of us who don't get that opportunity.
Tracy, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. Tracy O'Carroll, Deputy Director of the National Care Experience Programme at HICWA. We'll be back with more in the programme, including just after 10, Community Garda information.